From sea to sea. Oh. From planet to planet. And star to shining star. We see the Earth. Ah, well, yeah. The show that's taken 16.4 seconds to kind of put together, and we're here. I'm here. I think I'm going to need a round table. So, this is Strange Universe. Sean is M.I.A. M.I.A. Not here. So, the usual crew. Roll up. Let's see the Earth. Okay. So, this is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And we're pleased as punch, tickled pink, and totally unexpecting to do the show all by myself. All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, riding high on the etheric plane, it's Yom Kippur, and we're not dead yet. Yes, we're simulcasting live with Wolf Spirit Radio, and it should all be quite fun. Except I thought Sean was going to be here, and so I've got to do the show. And so I'd better look at Facebook, or we can talk about stuff. So, tonight's show is with your host, the man evicted by gypsies, the man who abducts aliens and probes them in his shed. Yeah, Mr. Crown-based transmissions, this is JP. Hello. Very unexpectedly. Hang on, turn that one off. Turn it off. Gone. That's it. Stay off. Unexpectedly, I have to do the show all by myself. So, I have no idea where anybody is, because I just thought I was going to produce, and I've got all these other things in my mind today, so I'm going to just join into the Rev chat room, make some announcements. What do we need to know? What do we need to talk about? Well, yes, we're still here. There's a big thing. We are indeed still on this planet. CERN hasn't blown the planet up, not yet. Anyway, apparently it's not working till Thursday. Oh, there's Noreen. Hello, Noreen. Ah, well, yeah, I mean, Skype's on. Yeah, he's on Skype, it seems, but he's not in the call. I don't know. Where they go. So I'm just going to try and bring Sean back in again and see if he's sort of just gone to the loo or something like that. Anywho. So, yeah, thanks, Noreen. I'm just going to come on the chat room here at Revolution Radio. FreedomSlips.com. It is a listener-supported station. That means that it's supported by you people who are listening. Indeed, it's supported by the producers and hosts as well, by producing content and hosting. So, this may be your lucky day. You may be able to call in into Sean David Morton Show. And yeah, standing by for phone hookups. Well, let's see what happens. You can call into calling into Freedom Screen is not going to get to me, I don't think, because nobody was expecting me to take up the studio. So that's just me. Anyway, what can we talk about? Oh, sorry, excuse my mic. That's the very loose little cable there. Hello, everybody. Hello, Darpa-bum. Oh, yeah, telling me about Skype. Yeah, Skype is... Has anybody noticed that not only has Not only is it coming up with... hang on, let's just bring Cranial in. Cranial? No, I haven't got Cranial. Sorry, Count, I've got you on my Skype. I'd like to. Oh, you could do... Okay, so let me go... 775, 773... 3431. That's my number that will get me into that will get you into my thing once I've connected in with Skype. It's all a bit, you know, today. Welcome to Strange Universe, where everything is always a complete mess. Strangely enough, my telephone lines have been much improved since my recent MIA from the internet for a 3-week break. I tell you, I'd really recommend a 3-week break if you ever get a chance. Just turn off your internet, or you know, if it breaks or something or goes wrong. So I'm just signing into Skype here to change the phones. So yeah, it's a great thing when it's all working, and when it's not working, it feels like terrible. I mean, how many people were pulling their hair out on Friday, on Monday, when nothing happened? Oh yeah. So let's see if we can bring in a couple of callers. This is the Pacific Northwest. Sir, Master, Sensei, Cliff, how are you, my friend? Bless your heart. So, thank you for rolling up and saving my bacon. Oops, bacon? Hey!
Just a second here.
A bacon.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah, bacon. That's going to be an interesting one.
No, let's not do a pig gate. although I got to...
did it come up?
Here. We did see that in the data.
Really, really nice, nice.
So in this last run, there was a statement about a new sex scandal that would develop. I put it out on halfpasthuman.com and just put a little snip of that I'd taken from there.
Excellent, excellent. So do you want to read that out, or shall I read that out?
Actually, if you could, I just have come in for a minute and. From working out in the grow dome, and I'm trying to get some hot water on some lemon, and I'll be right back with you.
Okay, well, I'll...
So if you could just go to Half Past Human,
yep,
and it's right on the main...
There thing. We go. Yeah. Excellent.
And I'll be right back in a second here.
Excellent.
Okay?
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, Cliff. Hey, a new sexual scandal. This is from Cliff's halfpasthuman.com. On air alone. Okay. A new sexual scandal is showing as having a disturbing, if distracting, effect on the markets over the course of a week in which the Fed et al., central bankster, really need a distracting miracle. It does not save them, though at one point they may actually be able to believe that they're able to propagandize their way out of their then current troubles. However, what is more revealing from the predictive perspective is that a minor character in a background image will be instrumental in the fracturing of both a major investment house as well as the political aspirations of a number of its associates. The data sets would seem to be suggesting that yet more suicides result. That's very interesting. Cliff, are your hands clean?
Yes. Yes, I'm doing fine.
A man with clean hands and a pure heart.
Well, we don't know about the latter. You've got to work a number of lifetimes for that. I think I've got a few more yet to go.
It's boiling away on the back burner, is it? It's distilling on the retort. So, yes, a long time. So what's up in the blogger, the botosphere?
Boy, I mean, it's just incredibly busy at the moment in terms of the amount of new subject matter that's breaking out. So from my perspective, in terms of our spiders going on out and gathering data, we're getting a lot of new sets. We use set theory. We're getting a lot of new subsets growing in support of older continuing developing sets like diaspora. So, for instance, we've had... recent examples of that with the diaspora of all the poor people from Syria. from, you know, the cobbles, the criminal gang that runs everything, from their mucking about with Syria, and they've added yet another wave of it there. But we've had new growth in sets from the diaspora all the way through to the new electrics and the upcoming burgeoning renaissance. And also new sets about new subjects that we have yet to delve into. So it's been very busy for us. It gets to a point where the display for our work can become so cluttered that after a while you look up and all you can see is little dots. You ever had that effect? Been staring at it too long?
Looking at the word big. Don't do that.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
So you're getting a kind of expansion, explosion. So let's first of all break that back to the, I call it diaspora, but the diaspora, which is essentially the spreading out of a people into the world, which is what's happening with all the Syrians.
Correct.
And the Kurds.
Correct. And it's like you can just go on and on and on if you start... there's also economic waves that are hitting in Kyrgyzstan that have caused a big shift there. Ukraine has happened, and all the North Africans. So, and then over on the Americas, we've got a lot of pressure with existing governmental challenges or whatever that cause people to want to move. And then on top of that, we now have collapsing Brazilian real and other currencies in Latin America just going. There's going to be a major super scandal, I guess you'd call it. It may actually be a black swan trigger, too, by the way, as the Brazilian oil company collapses under the weight of all the corruption. And, by the way, takes down the Brazilian economy for a while with it. That may ripple out because of the interlinking of bonds and all these credit default swaps and all that sort of thing. But it's just such an interesting time. We have the Canadian shale oil industry collapsing, causing a ripple effect to the point where the Canadian housing market is bust, except for those select few cities that are being supported by offshore, mainly Chinese interest in real estate. So they're having a real estate boom to where is similar to what the UK has, where, you know, real estate is the economy, the selling it of it, the insuring of it, and so on, right?
Oh, yeah, and it's terrible. It's the worst thing to ever happen.
Exactly. It's like you don't really grow a nation. There's a really wise indigenous fellow over here. They call them Indians, but it's rather a rude statement in my way.
Yeah, I like to call them First Nations or something. Yeah.
There you go. Exactly. Over here in Spokane, and I can't think of his name at the moment, nor the tribe he's associated with, but he's local to Washington State, and he once said when this big wave of money rolled through the state about 20 years ago to get the First Nations people into the gambling business and the casino business, he said that their group, they had a real battle in his group, and he ended up with a majority of the votes and so on for their tribal region, which was over near Spokane, I think, in the dry part of the state. And his statement was that you don't build a nation selling tobacco and gambling. You don't build a people that way. And that's really what we're looking at now with, you don't build a people or a nation selling real estate to each other. That's just not a healthy economy. And so, we've seen the collapse of that in Canada, as their boom in the oil business has collapsed due to not only the falling, or primarily to the falling price of oil, but also to the very soggy grade of oil they sell from Canada. It's not very clean, requires a lot of processing, so it's at the low end of the oil of the petroleum world anyway, and so they've really had quite a hit there. Only a couple of cities left in Canada being supported by Chinese money, and that's starting to dry up. It's pretty much coagulating all over the place. That was the primary linguistic label that we got in our last in our ALTA reports, I think in June, was that maybe it was even May, that we'd reach a period right after August, or right after the 8th of July, where we were going to run into 7 weeks of chaos, and then which would run us up into the end of the first week in September, and from that point on we would be in coagulation. And we're really seeing that now, the coagulation in terms of the commerce. It's just sort of drying up like blood coagulating in the veins of commerce. Without the credit and the expansion of it, the whole system is decaying from the outside in. That was something I hadn't expected. I was actually naive in thinking that, this giant behemoth, this walking dinosaur zombie bank-driven system would basically have a heart attack or a brain aneurysm and keel over. But I see now that probably what it's going to happen is that it's going to coagulate from the outside in. All the pools of blood will all dry up, and it'll just sort of freeze in place like a giant statue, and we'll all walk around it for a while until it crumbles.
It's a kind of slowing down and getting more and more turgid. A bit like the internet. So, Monday, Cliff, what happened to your bots? I mean, I've been watching the Norse Viking attack maps of cyber wars going on, and it's quite exciting and spectacular, but like these are people's servers and stuff. Well, have you picked up anything on that, or did they ruin your bot?
I was just going to say, that's what we run into, is I know that it's going on, not because I care to go and look at it, so to speak, but because we can't get any work done, because the bandwidth slows down to just a creep, or we end up having to route. I suck down a lot of bandwidth anyway, we have bandwidth issues to the point where we have to take a fractional T1, we have to lease basically a major commercial line just to be able to handle the flow that we need for the spiders to pull the data down. And it causes us challenges anyway, but we're fortunate that our little server garden is located very near a major T1 hub. And so we just have a fractional T1 line that we're leasing. But even with that, the bandwidth was, it was just incredible. And we ended up, as I say, having to reroute, trying to get some of our major data streams through other routings areas, simply because of the big chunks of the net that were going brown. They weren't like going totally dark, but they were coagulating. Yes.
Right. Now, I've been following the web bot and you and what's your partner's name?
Igor?
No, the guy does the financial reports.
That's George Ure. We bought his company maybe 12 years ago, maybe in like 2005 or 6 or something.
Oh, really? Oh, anyway.
No, maybe it was later. Sorry, it was later than that. Probably 2009.
Yeah, but I've been following him since if you know him, George, you see. Anyway, there are various things that I kind of collected those little memes in my head and thought they go in the watch this box. And, the last time you were on Sean's show, we talked about Cousin Alexi and all of these things. There are these little memes that have dropped through that don't seem to have fulfilled themselves yet, because I feel that it's like they're on another year. They may be in September, but they weren't like September 2010. They may be September 2016 or something like that. Have you found things like that, that the cyclicity is out somehow?
Well, here's the issue. Or actually, there's a number of issues that you're getting really to the point of. The first is that I have to acknowledge that we're basically inventing this stuff. I have to take personal responsibility. I invent a lot of the mechanisms as I go forward. So it's not like I'm working to a set of known theorems. I don't have anybody who really understands time able to say, well, here's the mechanical the mathematical formula for how time echoes and ripples work. And so I have to discover this on my own. So let's take the example of the Banda Aceh quake, okay? That year, 300,000 people were killed, and a nation was thrown back to a previous age. And that was exactly the linguistics that we came up with, that I came up with, a year, 13 months ahead of the event. Now, So that was in the long-term data sets. Now, our data sets run into the immediacy data, which is usually good from about instantly, as soon as I see it, to about the end of the third week out. Then we have short-term data, which is from the beginning of the fourth week out to the end of the third month or the beginning of the fourth month. And then we have long-term data, which is basically about 19 months out. However, each and every one of these data categories has an error range that is equal to its entire length. So the long-term data sets have an error range that's equal to 19 months. Thus, we get into a 38-month range potential for these things. So we can be off by a year in there very easily. Now, there's also the issue of data masking, which happens, I don't want to say infrequently, but frequently enough that I pay attention to it. I'm looking for it all the time, but I don't find it, and then all of a sudden it sneaks up on me. And so we had data masking when we got the issue of the Banda Aceh quake, because 13 months ahead of that, the data set said that basically the three things that were of importance to us at the moment. The nation kicked back to a previous age, basically the Stone Age, 300,000 people killed, and this famous celebrity trial that was going to be totally interrupted and basically thrown out the window as a result of this earthquake. Now, here's the problem. All three of those things occurred, but one of them, the trial part, occurred in May of that year with the Scott Peterson trial in California, when the celebrity trial courtroom was emptied due to a minor earthquake. And then that threw me off, because part of that data set had been fulfilled. Makes sense?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Okay, so then 8 months later, we had the Banda Aceh quake, and the other two major components were fulfilled. And at the time, I did not recognize that it was possible that within the set structure that I am using, the supersets, subsets, etc., that it was possible that a large set could be masked by a smaller set that was closer in temporal proximity. Makes sense?
Yeah, so it's like there's a big blob overlaying a smaller blob that has more pointiness, maybe?
No.
Or is it the other way around?
Other way around. It's more like this. It's more like I'm looking through a telescope, and I can see in front of me an elk, and then it's only after the elk moves that I see the huge giant mountain with a spaceship on top, because the elk is closer to me in physical proximity and thus blocks out the larger view.
I see.
Okay, so that's what was going on. The smaller Scott Peterson trial was a high enough emotional intensity because of the celebrity nature of it, that it appeared within the larger set of the earthquake thing overall and dominated it temporally for the better part of 5 months. I hope that makes sense. This is really get tricky stuff.
Yeah, well, I can see your analogy of seeing, so you're looking down a thin tube anyway, and you can't really see what's going on. There must be a very, very complex patterning that you're looking at, and
exactly.
Probably only Cliff High knows how to read this stuff.
No, that's not true.
My guy
Igor, I've let him look at the data sets. He's just not very good at it, but he does pick up on the major shifts in linguistic emotional import. So he would pick up, for instance, and he would have gotten the Piggate reference, although he might not have interpreted those same words that they actually went into that paragraph exactly the same way I would have. And he hates it. It drives him crazy. So I do all of that part. But it is possible for other people to do it once you're shown the connections and so on. It's quite tedious, though, because the software grew over time. I never envisioned it as a complete system. It was just following one interesting temporal kind of a thing after another within the software. And so I have disconnected parts in differing languages, and it makes it cumbersome to do. That part of it is basically no one would want to do it other than myself. It's just too tedious.
Yeah, being a software guy, I kind of understand there are certain intermediate lumps of data that you don't want anybody else to touch because they won't get it. Yeah. So, with regard to these memes, so there was the first one. This is the one that I'm really focusing on is the Swiss cheese data situation, which seems to be like that Monday was one example of that, wasn't it?
Correct, yes. But you also have to understand that, of course, that is a necessary part of what I'm doing, simply because it's impossible for a single individual to cover the vast plethora of data points that might emerge. And so this is something that I knew going in when I first started working on this. But initially, of course, my focus was entirely self-serving. I wanted to figure out a way to get predictive at stock market stuff so I didn't have to mess around and I could make a lot of money and then go on and do interesting things. It didn't work out that way. I went on to do interesting things and sort of forgot about making a lot of money. But the nature of the thing growing over time, I think also contributes at a software level. I'm sure you'll appreciate trying to make interconnections between scripting languages and display mechanisms and so on, all the way back to SQL databases. Necessarily, you're going to create software inbuilt artifacts, if you will, that contribute again to whether or not we get a Swiss cheese data effect. So a lot of that may not be naturally arising, but may simply be arising as a result of poor programming.
Well, you know, join the rest of the internet. You know, everything's talking about poor programming. Skype. So anyway, we're up against a hard break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Cliff, if you want to stay around, thank you very much, and just listen to these adverts and do whatever they tell you. And welcome back to Strange Universe. This is JP standing in for Dr. Professor Sean David of the Mortons. And, that's not doing anything good. And my very special, my co-host tonight is Cliff Webbutt. Hi! Yay! So, so many exciting things to talk about because there's so much going on and so much has been predicted by your Webbutt service indeed, hasn't it not? Hasn't it not, sir?
It's gotten to that point where even a lot of the major trends that were years out of date, and see, this is something that I don't grasp in terms of my own work. There's still so much in the way that's unknown, and that's the good part of it. That's why even at my age and the number of years I've been doing this, 20-plus, I guess, it's still intriguing because, what language do you program in?
I do C, Fortran.
C. All right. Yeah. I like deep C stuff, right?
Deep
dereferencing
C.
Pointers and all this kind of stuff. So that, you know, and then you're going out and you find a spot in RAM and you look at it with your software and you bring back the stuff and hey, it's what you expected to find. So there's this element of software that's rather dull and boring, that it keeps getting repetitious. And basically, if you were to do commercial software, you find yourself so often reinventing the wheel of some variant of something you've done at some other commercial programming job. But with the work I've gotten here, falling into this time component, it's as though I've discovered, maybe consciousness would be the best word to apply to it, that is not my own, that is feeding stuff back through the mechanism of our collective zeitgeist on the net. And I've been able to hook into these patterns and discover that this exists. And I was working in obscurity for a number of years, quite convinced I was insane. My wife was also of that opinion. And because, you know, when you think basically, uh-oh, the internet's talking to me, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, though, other individuals also set about, it's been commercialized, and there's a number of competitors or contemporaries that are also doing this kind of work, and they're discovering the same kind of things. So it's been validated at that level. But it is very exciting to discover things about what you're doing 20 plus years into it that make you sit up and say, whoa, you know, here I've been doing this for 20 years and I was totally unaware of this particular effect. So there have been forecasts that were incredibly accurate, like the blondes on boats, right? 3 or 4 months later, there goes the Costa Concordia with a blonde on the bridge distracting the captain and causing him to run the boat aground, you know, what, mile off the island, and he should have been 20 miles on the other side in the channel. It was good. It was a nice prescient hit. And then you sit there and you scratch your head and you wonder about some of this stuff, like the continuing growth, slow growth in some of the sets that suggest it should have occurred this year, and then you wait, you go through the range, and it doesn't occur, and then 2 and 3 and 4 years afterwards, bang, there it is. So it may be that my rather arbitrary way of looking at data way in the beginning of this process and slicing it three ways, maybe I should have been a little bit more spread out in the gradient, you know, and sliced it 10 ways and had some super long-term stuff. Because we do in our data sets in the lexicon have connections to language that suggests sometimes impacts 4 and 5 generations out. So we get, for instance, the current shifting and scattering of the peoples, diaspora, as we call it here, as Americans would understand it. And that scattering of the peoples involving the Syrians has with it 5 generations or about 85 to 105 years worth of impact. So, as I say, perhaps I then should have also had a data set that spanned out that long. However, my time on Earth is so relatively short, I really couldn't see myself doing it that way anyway.
So, Cliff, talking about languages, because, you know, the diaspora is happening in Syria, in the Middle East. Presumably, you don't have an Arabic language web bot, or do you?
Oh, no, you're wrong.
You're quite a polyglot, aren't you, sir?
I am, to some extent, simply because I was an army brat, and we moved around a lot, so I've got a smattering and a scattering of a number of languages, and those that are, for instance, related, such as the Romance languages, it's very easy to go from Latin to, which, of course, you know, they shoved down your throats in British military schools, and that's what I was forced to attend in Europe because there was no American bases set up at the time that they first started shipping dependents over there. And so I got this weird British military prep school education where I was a definite outsider. I was untouched because of the position that my father was in relative to the U.S. military. In other words, I wasn't hazed or anything by the others. Plus, I was pretty good at judo. So they mostly left me alone, and I was actually able to concentrate on the education. And thus, I started off with Latin and a little bit of Greek. I favored the Romance languages for a while, and so I was able to go to French and Spanish at all with some ease, although I'm not necessarily fluent or extremely well-versed in or well knowledgeable in nouns. I understand the subject-verb object relationship, how the language works, so if I really had to, I could bone up on it fairly quick. Then, of course, there was the problem of learning Russian, which was really cool, and that was also in a military school context in the 60s, when they were the great enemy. And that, of course, is related to Greek because of some of its vowel connections, although not in the way the verbs are put together. But getting back to your original question, yes, I do have some level of Middle East language understanding within the box.
Please mute your TV, or I'll disconnect you, please.
The filters there are limited by this emotional connection thing. So basically, here's how it works. In order for the software that I've written to suss out any prescient kind of words, it works through this lexicon of words that have an emotional quantifier and qualifier attached to it. So it's easy to add a language, even in our multi-byte computer world, because, of course, the language is identified in the meta character set. You know what language you're working with, whether it's simplified Chinese or, you know, standard Arabic or however Microsoft or whoever has defined it. Basically, I use ISO standards anyway. So that tells you what your language you're dealing with. And then really all I'm after is to find associations between certain linguistic types, so phrases, structures, expressions that bring with them emotional components that in the past have proven to be prescient about whatever the context is within which they are discovered.
Excellent. Thank you.
See, I don't need to know all of the Arabic. I don't even need, and in fact, I'm unsure because it's all presented to me as 4-digit hexadecimal integers anyway that then tie back to the lexicon. I wouldn't know, unless I really bored down into it, whether my data set was from an Arabic source, even though it may be speaking about the Syrians. For all I know, the collected data sets might be Chinese and Icelandic.
Great. So you're getting a good coverage over. We've got a couple new additions. So let me first 502. Please stand by. Do we have an important announcement from Nighthawk?
Oh no, there was no announcement. I find this conversation very interesting. Hey, Cliff, how you doing? This is the owner of the station.
Yeah, I know. I know who you are. I always think of you as Danger Dan, you know, which is just how the association formed in my head because I'm dyslexic, so it really stuck. But no, I know Nighthawk, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's just, you never know what's going to happen with Nighthawk. He might just go off. Anyway. I'm like a Mexican school child's clock. All right. Anyway, I guess that joke got beyond it.
Boom.
But you ever wondered whether, you know, I'm a coder too, but you know, I mean, have you ever wondered whether, self programming that seems to be going on? It just, you know, I've been doing this for years, and it just seems, you know, you get this headlong rush. You know, and I just, I'm having a hard time. I keep getting...
Yeah, sorry. 502, we can hear you clearing your throat and making noises that is interrupting. Can you just stand by for a second? Okay, you just step away from the speaker a minute. Go ahead, Mike.
All right, so anyway, you know, I've always kind of wondered if, you know, if we're also working with self-fulfilling, prophecies. You know, because if you get enough people believing that, you know, the end's going to come. Well, you get enough people doing that, they're going to kind of force the world into that headlong projection.
I would have to disagree for a couple of different reasons. We've actually had demonstrable evidence that millennial fever exists, and yet the world continues even past the shift in the millennials. And when we shifted from 999 into the year 1000, reputedly, there were mass suicides and stuff, this kind of thing, yet the world ticks on. But there's another aspect of this that's involved too. And that has to do with, thinking and destiny, okay? And, so we are not complete total beings here on earth. We're doers in the body. And so the body is the limitations that force us, through time, in the materium. And the body carries with it, in an area which if we were able to use our eyes, we could see in this sort of like gelatinous atmosphere of energy that extends out into a giant sphere that's our actual energetic body. We could see everything that's ahead for us in our future because we carry that within people really don't understand what it is, but it has been and is appropriately labeled the soul. And that this template brings with it all of the stuff you have to encounter and decide to deal with in this life or to pass and go on to something else. And so, for instance, all of the scars you're going to get in your body usually are held within your energy body. And so you can imagine yourself in this energy body, this energy atmosphere that's more or less circular, and out at various levels are the scars themselves that will later on manifest on your body. Now, I'm full of scars, and so I'm really good at determining when this is going to happen. But what happens is, as you go through time, you could imagine that the time stream forces those scars, which are a little bit denser than the energy around them, closer and closer and closer and closer until the event materializes, and you have to live through that event and produce that scar on your body. And this came with the template that allows you to exist in the materium in this particular life. Now, that template is where we leak out. I'm convinced of this, that from that template, that's where we leak out the prescient vision that my data sets capture. So we are, at some level, able to see these events coming through this atmospheric energetic mass and in some way decode them in our very complex brains, associate them temporally with language, and leak that out. And I can explain my original precept for how I thought this came about, which is still valid, but now I've really refined where it comes from. So that part of it comes from our collective and individual bodies. So, for instance, you might know that your heartbeat can be sensed up to 60 feet away if you've been exercising, maybe 120 feet if you were a superior athlete. So that's how far out from you in a giant circle your energetic sphere exists. And so if you're in close proximity to somebody who's in within that sphere, then you also share a collective energetic mass, and thus another layer is added, and that is the collective vision, so to speak, or the collective scars, so to speak, that you would have to live through with that individual under certain events. And then you can separate, and then that layer disappears, but it all aggregates for nations and planets and so on. So that's really where all of our future comes from. It sort of leaks up through there. Now, the other effect you're talking about exists solely in our current level of consciousness within the denser part of the body.
Cliff, I need to interject on that, because by what you're saying to me, you know, if you have enough people that are just headlong rushing into the apocalypse because it's just easier to rush into that kind of mentality, you know, these 100-foot people, from what you're explaining, I may have misunderstood, but it just seems like, you know, we have a world of people who are just literally, like I said, rushing headlong with
okay,
and there's the world, and you know, and they just seem to be dragging everyone along with them.
Well, there's the thing, dude. Here's the thing. You're quite correct. You've got individuals that are absolutely hell-bent, okay? They are determined to take themselves and as many other people as they can to hell. Now, many of these individuals do drag other individuals along with them at various levels through the society, everything from the suicide bomber all the way up to the pig-abusing prime ministers who take whole nations to war, okay, in an attempt to take themselves to their own personal hell. So I grant you that you're quite correct, but that does not exist as an imperative within our minds, only within those people that allow themselves to be entrained to it. This happens to be, by the way, what Catherine Austin Fitz is really having fits about at the moment. I'm sure she'll get on my case about that. But she's very upset about the use of entrainment technology that's appearing all over. Because with that, what they do is they entrain the denser mind that's within contact to your brain, and thus move your denser body and so on. They can't alter what's within that energetic field that you must encounter. But they could perhaps force you to choose not to deal with it. So, for instance, from my perspective, life is the materium here that we're in, this material world, is an education facility. And we have things that we can learn or choose to not learn in this life. I'm also of the opinion that if we choose not to learn them this life, we've got to deal with them in some other life. And it's just the way that things are. So I think that maybe what they're trying to do with that level of entrainment is to be able to switch people over to ignoring the imperatives of life and surrendering their lives in service to the greater powers that be, that sort of a thing. Make sense?
Yeah, it does. And, hey, Cliff, have you ever considered doing your own radio show?
I would love to, Guy, but it'd be really cool. But I can't commit because I still have people and situations I have to care for. My mother has passed, and so 3 years of service there have left, and then my brother is also gone, so I'm basically free there, but I still have to take care of my wife and a few things, so I just couldn't commit to any kind of a time.
I understand. I'd like to have you on more here at the station because I like your message. Your message is pretty cool, and you answered my questions. And, it's like, you know, I started this radio station for one reason only, because I refuse to give up on this world. And, so that's what I work forward to. And, you know, I still go back to that old effect that, you know, you keep trying. You know, I made a new promo yesterday. You know, it's like you keep showing people the possibility of doom, and I don't understand why so many people want to rush headlong into doom. because it really requires no effort to just wait for the end or for the end to come. You know, to fix anything requires a little bit of effort.
Yeah, but there's another aspect of that that we've actually just discussed. And I've seen it in some individuals, and I don't know that this is true of everybody you encounter, but you can actually look at some of the people you'll encounter, and you can say to yourself, that person is rushing headlong into doom because they really don't want to face X, Y, or Z. So, for instance, you might see a young person who is just so fed up with their relationship with their parents that they're hell-bent on hell in some form or another, right? You know, and it's that sort of an expression. Those people may be running against their own destiny, though.
Actually, Cliff, I see it less now with the young people. I see it more with the people my age, the 50-plussers. Have just decided the apocalypse is just set in stone. Let's just wait for it to come. But yet, you know, people like my daughter, she's just getting ready to turn 20. They're all hopeful, and they're, you know, it seems we have a resurgence in the younger groups that looks like, you know, the middle 60s, and maybe we can get a moving again.
And we don't even have to worry about it, Guy. You can actually kick back and relax, and I can tell you this with certainty from two different sources. Not only my own work, which forecasts a huge renaissance that really takes off in 2019 into 2020, but also if you'll go to the Half Past Human site and drill down into some of this St. Clair material, Michael St. Clair, you'll see that there's a 500-year renaissance cycle that has been stymied, just as the previous Renaissance was stymied at a particular point for 10 years. Ours has been stymied, and we've sort of dug down for 10 years, and we're about ready to explode again, and the Renaissance will propel us into about 2040. So we're going to be good, actually, golden.
Awesome.
Just got to make it to 2020.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cliff. I'm going to get off the show now. I just wanted to ask some of my own questions, and didn't mean to invade anybody's space if I did, but thank you very much.
One more thing before you rush, if you got a second.
Yeah.
As an old fellow here, let me point out something. Hope is lost when the body and the energy levels begin to fail, and we're dealing with a world where the pollution are not only electromagnetic that we can't see, but also the chemtrails with the fly ash from the coal plants coming down on us. And so we're dealing with a hyper-illuminized world that's also electrically energetic. So we have to be proactive, in my opinion, on this. And we have to be cognizant of how our bodies function and what we need to do to make them run at an optimal rate. A lot of people my age have no energy, and they're just falling to pieces, and they're not taking any steps to it because they're of the opinion that they can obtain adequate nutrition from their diet. And that is not true, and I was actually seriously been researching this. Another aspect of chemistry I'd never really gotten into, but because I've done biochemistry for oceanography. But in any event, I've been researching supplements and this kind of stuff in a haphazard way all my life. But I got rather serious about it, and I've discovered that with any variant of the American diet, you have to consume close to 40,000 calories to get enough micronutrients for a day. So if you're not taking micronutrient supplements to compensate for the huge levels of stress that are being caused, then you end up with these low energy situations that cause you to be very depressed all the time, to actually want to stumble into that doom simply because the body is not there supporting you because of the assault that we're all under.
Well, you know, I'm not particularly into the doom. I'm just here to give everybody their voice. You know, I'm a type 2 diabetic. Yeah. Actually, I was a hardcore type 2 diabetic 2 years ago. I have reduced my meds by 90%. I used to have to take 10 milligrams to get Lipizide every day and 2,000 milligrams of metformin a day. I'm down to 500 milligrams of metformin a day and 5 milligrams of glipizide a day just due to diet and changing a lot of things like not chugging sodas and and just getting lazy and going to fast food restaurants and stuff like that. You know, I have bad days and good days. That kind of stuff. That's the this. Talk.
Oh yes, it ain't nothing but a heartache, war, and central banks, and because you mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz, and I always think about war and central banks.
Yes, the two are bound together. Well, statistically, too, look, there were no global wars until the creation of the Fed, 1913.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, let's go to war, but if you'd like to kind of take it on a more metaphysical, meta level of what is more going on than the war, because the war's really a distraction, isn't it?
Well, it serves a couple of different purposes, though. You have to understand or grasp the grand complexity of it all, if you will. Imagine that all of us billions of humans are running around with our little energy bodies. Some of our energy bodies hold in there horrific things that we must deal with in this life, okay? Some of those things will be fatal and will end it, our lives. In fact, at some point, you will run into whatever it is that ends your life, and that's held within your energy body, and it's gradually coming its way towards you. Well, many of these individuals that are involved in the war process at the level of the actual warriors, those individuals that place and take lives, place their lives at risk and take others, those individuals are frequently acting out their own internal destiny that's carved into their soul, into their energy body, and they must contend with that. So there's that level of it. There's also the collective, giant energy body that we're all sharing at the nation level, as then also the psychoses of the mad people at the top. So war serves a purpose for individuals at various different levels, otherwise it would not exist. And to be anti-war is a good concept, but if you're going to do so, you need to recognize that you must, in a Buckminster Fuller kind of an analysis approach, provide a replacement that supersedes the war at each and every one of the levels. Does no good to create a League of Nations or a UN or anything like that, because that doesn't do anything for the warriors, those individuals that must deal with and contend with life-threatening processes in this life as a result of the template that they're living under. And thus, so you need to take care of things at that level. You need to deal with the money component of it at the mega corporation, war machinery level, as well as the bank level, all the way up. You need a holistic approach to it all. And one needs in my opinion, a critical eye all the way down to the metaphysical level to understand why humans are as they are, and therefore one must try and understand what it is to be human and how that works at an individual level all the way up to the collective again.
So
war, I don't think, actually, you know, the song is, what is it good for? Well, there's a lot of things it's good for, but there's much more cost-effective replacements. So, for instance, I am a warrior. I was born, if you look astrologically, it works out that I'm living up to my sign. I was born in a position to where I was placed at risk in Vietnam. I made certain choices in my life that took me away from that allowed me to make the decision not to kill. Even though it is within my nature and within the greater energy body that I'm dealing with at this point, and undoubtedly comes from previous lives where I have been in a position where I chose the opposite and now I have to deal with the opposite of that, that kind of a logic. But so I chose to deal with my warrior nature by subsuming it in service through the martial arts. And so I chose the art of peace, which is the hardest of all the martial arts to learn, Aikido, one with the highest level of dropouts, but also the highest level of recidivism, if you will, of people dropping back in because they just can't get it out from underneath their skin. And it's because it is a true martial art in existence, you know, no competitive aspect, no sport, any of that kind of thing. And so it serves at that level for many people like myself that otherwise would have had a life in the military. I was an army brat. Circumstances kept forcing me into it, military schools, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It seemed predestined. And yet I was able to grasp what was going on at a young age and say to myself, just because circumstances point this path out, thus I must examine whether or not there is an alternative. And it wasn't that I particularly felt a fear of death or anything like that, having faced it repeatedly in many bizarre circumstances as a young kid. But it was really getting wrestling with the issue of taking another human life in this life, and thus having to deal with the consequences in the mentition after death that's known as metempsychosis. I didn't want to deal with that. I didn't want to take with me into my hells and my heaven having taken another life if I could avoid it, especially if that taking of the life had nothing to do with me as an individual, but was in some way being forced on me at a cultural level by giant corporations. And so it was the same thing that we all wrestled with if you were in the Vietnam lottery issue and all of those kind of things in that generation. But I just chose a slightly different viewpoint, because at one point I was hell-bent on my hell of ending up in the Navy because of a screwy set of circumstances. And so I found myself right up to the edge of volunteering to serve in the Navy as a particular out. And chose to, nope, I said, that was it. I guess, you know, I just can't do it. I had to stand and face the consequences of the rejection and, you know, having to alter a predestined life, and you sort of feel like you're sort of slotted to. Makes sense?
So we've been, thank you for that, because it's, you know, how to channel. Because I came up with a funny thing the other week. Is the idea that you know, there's a big meme that men don't cry, right? Why? I believe that is a potential way of releasing energy before violence, but it wouldn't be very socially acceptable to see men crying everywhere. But what do you think of that? An actual expression.
Men cry because, okay, you have to examine why men cry. Men cry out of compassion. Some men may cry out of pain or fear or anxiety or being overwhelmed by emotion, but this makes sense. Crying is a way of releasing hormones. Those hormones are released in through the tear duct. They can be smelled. So, for instance, when schizophrenics or psychotics cry, it makes people in the room nervous because it releases all these hormones. But crying in women serves a different purpose, and it's basically this is an understanding that makes sense. That is to think of men as operating out of the blood, out of desire mind. So humans, basically, in our bodies, we have three minds. We have our body mind, which is where our senses are reporting what's poking us, you know, how your butt's feeling, all of this kind of thing. And it's all of the input from all your senses. And then you have desire mind, which is one of the two types of hormonal components that are within your body. Desire mind is triggered by testosterone, that kind of thing. Then there's feeling mind, in which you have emotions, and you are subsumed by the emotional part of it all. And that's dominated by the estrogen in you, even if you're male. And this is true even on females who have testosterone, and then they fall into desire mind. So so men crying can occur because they become overwhelmed at the physical biological level by emotions at a time when their estrogen to testosterone levels are wonky. And so many men can't help it. They find themselves weeping, especially as they become more aged, because they don't understand why this is going on. My late father-in-law was one of these, and I could have helped him with my understanding now, because it's relatively easily addressed. As men age, we need to, and in fact women do as well, although it's much more difficult for them, but we need to balance our hormones. And so nature has provided a way of doing this for us, which is the ingestion of certain tonics. And depending on where you are in the planet, you can find these tonics in any number of plants, but let's just take ginseng an example. It's a great hormone balancing agent, because it's really odd in the sense that it's has a binary nature. It can drop your estrogen or it can raise it depending on what you need. So if you're low in testosterone, it raises it, and you have to know how to deal with it as a male and how to take it and the fact that if you're running into this in your younger years because of the environmental pollution that's all around you and because of the constant bombardment of the electromagnetic waves, it's perfectly understandable that men get into these weird mental states now because of the impact of these pollutants that never used to exist. And so the remedies that in the past had been good for men in their 70s are now having to be pressed down into service in men in their 40s. And so in this case, it would be ginseng that we're talking of. There's dozens of hormone-balancing tonics that you could take. But in this case, I have a familiarity with ginseng, and so I can say that if you're in your 40s, you'd better only take 6-year-old or 8-year-old roots. You shouldn't take really strong ginseng, and it has nothing to do with you not being able to handle it or anything like that. It's that you're going to need that really strong stuff later on, and you need to know how to balance all of this kind of stuff out. So in that sense, the crying component, I take every example of it when I run into it, and I look around to decide, okay, what's kind of going on here? Because there's so much subtext in our modern lives that are due to things that most people don't think about, which is this overwhelming degradation of the biological environment, even down to the energy body level, by the chemtrails, the crap they're pumping out there, and the electromagnetic pollution, and the psychoactive chemicals, et cetera, et cetera. It's not our father's world, you know.
I know. In a way, we going to need to find ways of dumping, like saunas and things like that, to kind of sweat all this stuff out of our bodies, because, you know, we're continually being toxic. We have to detox it all. And, yes.
Skin is your largest organ, and perspiration is a very effective way of doing that.
Ah, mine's massive.
And as you age, it's harder, too, you know.
Yeah.
Excuse me, the sweat glands reduce and so on, especially as males. As you reach a certain peak in life, your testosterone naturally wanes anyway. And so you're going to have to work harder mentally to maintain the mental wherewithal to go forward. I can give you some hints here. I've got a really cool longevity formula that people can explore on their own, as long as no one will curse me in their heavens or hells for taking this, and they do it on personal responsibility. I'll discuss what I'm doing for myself. And I'm to provide a context, I'm 62 years old. It's been maybe 6 years that I've been dealing with the death of my brother and my mother, and so I haven't really committed myself to my Aikido in those past 6 years. I've been a drop-in and a casual kind of a guy. But at 62, I'm now committing finally to, you know, getting off my butt and going back and getting my black belt, finally starting to take the tests. I've just been reluctant to test because part of the commitment for a black belt is you have to teach for a year. So, I could never make that commitment, and now I can. So, in any event, in order to overcome the pollution at all and the body degradation and to support that level of endurance that's demanded, I have to examine my situation. Now, I'm a vegetarian long term, so I know, for instance, that the common understanding is that I'll have low carnosine, and carnosine is one of those flip-flop chemicals. If you need something, it gives it to you. It raises it. If you don't need it, it lowers it. Blood sugar included. So something that Nighthawk should look into. Yeah, actually, he ought to explore this longevity formula. Here's why, too. It consists of four components, four basic components, okay? There's three that have to be taken together and then one that can be taken separately. These are, you can call them supplements. I kind of tend to think of them as nootropics because they're between a supplement and a vitamin. But they consist of carnosine, L-carnosine, and DMAE, and acetyl-L-carnitine. And carnosine is the flip-flop chemical that's sort of an amino acid, but it's not really. It's essential to life. It's required in your body, and it's a health regulator at so many levels, and it protects your brain and all of this kind of stuff. But it has one side effect that in the past had been cause for the powers that be to say no one should take this because it builds up this particular toxin. That toxin that it builds up is a naturally occurring toxin that it is getting your body to excrete. So the more of the carnosine you would take, the more of the toxin you would build up as it cleansed your body of stuff. But now we're aware of this concept of stacking, where you take certain bioreactive chemicals together for their mutually synergistic effect. So if you take those three together, carnosine, DMAE, and carnitine, then you'll find that the DMAE and the carnitine strip your body of the toxin that's built up on the, by the carnosine. Now, being a vegetarian, I don't get carnosine in my diet. I don't eat red meat, which is its primary source. I can get a little bit from some beans and legumes and other vegetables, but it's rough. So I have to supplement at that level. And, of course, I'm aware of the danger of building up of the, I think it's called lipocine or something, which is the toxin that builds up. And but the combination is just absolutely phenomenal. And it's been well known by bodybuilders for a number of years. The longevity component of it, the three as one, the stacking, is relatively new in the last, say, 5 or 6 years as part of the nootropic biohacking meme, if you will. So those three together support blood sugar, give you brain protection against dementia. They help clean up. They're basically super antioxidants is what it amounts to. And so they clean up all the free radicals, and they get your body all cleansed in an appropriate fashion. Now, on the other side of it, you need something that provides energy. And one way to get it would be, for instance, sugar and caffeine. But this is no good because when you ingest sugar or caffeine, the individual molecules, if you will, the energy component, when they're burned in the cells, leave a residue that is acidic. And that's why they're considered to be acidic foods. And you can actually create many more problems for yourself following such a regimen of trying to get energy out of, especially as coders. You know what the old saying, what's a coder? It's a machine for turning coffee and sugar and pizza into code.
Yeah, Twinkies, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, so we all live on this sugar diet, but we shouldn't because of the acidic residuals cause problems, especially with the absorption of the carnosine, the acetyl L-carnitine, getting that up into the brain and so on. So they, you really need to look more at your diet while you're doing this, longevity formula, but you'll still get benefit of it, out of it nonetheless. Besides which, by the way, DMAE is great for increasing thinking and cognition and mentition in all its forms. But in any event, the other component to this is energy. So what you need to look at is what actually drives the energy in the human body. And it's this, chemical exchange that's called the ATP to ADP transfer, which is the transfer of a single atom basically being batted and forth in two forms of a phosphate. And that exchange can be fueled by outside things like caffeine and so on, but at a serious cost. Not only the acid component, but the wearing down of the body as it does so. So it drives you, so to speak. So caffeine, hard drugs like speed, they accelerate the body to the point where it burns more fuel, etc. All of these kind of things are really rather negative. But you could, if you wanted to look at it, look at pumping up the energy from another level, which is to supply the cell, the part of the cell that burns the, that is your little nuclear reactor, all of the stuff it needs to have a better little furnace. And so that approach provides energy at the cellular level. And one way you can get that energy is to get into substances like CoQ10 and other elements other components that are bioreactive. These coenzymes, enzymes are in fact the catalyst within the body that gets anything to happen. But there's a relatively new one, and that is this PQQ, and I won't butcher it by trying to state its a scientific name, but it and all these others supply the mitochondria, the center of the cell, the little nuclear furnace, all the stuff it needs to be very energetic, without supplying that driving feeling that ends up being you depleting you by basically depleting the adrenals. So caffeine and all of these driving substances to provide us energy in the modern life do so at the cost of our adrenal complex. And that is, the adrenal complex, by the way, is where consciousness attaches to the body. So no wonder you feel really crappy after, you know, a caffeine binge and 48 hours of working. And I can't see why they make doctors work these absurd shifts. It's bound to make their brains non-functional over time. And no wonder they die at a young age. You know, I think the average lifespan of a working hospital physician is 57. Statistical mean period of death.
Meantime between failure, huh? So
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, my kettle's boiling in the background. That's that weird noise. We're just about to take another 4 minute break or so, so you can go off and get yourself a cup of tea, as I will. This music will come up in any second now. Cliff, it's great tossing these topics around because we got a question coming in from the chat. And so we'll cover those all in the last segment of Strange Universe with today JP and Cliff Hyatt as co-host. Come on, music. Maybe he's changed. He's probably changed the adverts. It's now 16:27. See, it's not happening.
Glad I'm not into producing.
Oh man, it's been such a hairy day. I mean, it's been a hairy week. You know, I had my show that was on at just about half an hour's time on Monday, and Skype started working about 3 minutes before the show, and it was just really, really hairy in there. No music. Still no music. That's very interesting. Walk, what are you done with the music? My kettle's boiling. So anyway, this is Strange Universe. Oh, yes, of course, we are on Revolution Radio, a listener-supported station at freedomslips.com, like freedomslips.com. And please go to the site support area and drop a coin, a Bitcoin, a nano coin, a Doge coin into the coffer. And then I can go and please. Hey, what else? No, we're not going to have a one. We might even have one of these no break ones because this is getting silly. So,
well, you've got to get your tea though.
Yeah, I've got to get this kettle here. So anyway, Cliff. There you go. See, finally. Wow, that was the biggest cover that I ever. Bless your heart. We'll see you in a couple of minutes. Thank you. Don't go away. And welcome back. Couldn't find a decent piece of music anyway. So we're getting straight into it. So, Cliff, where were we? Big holes in the universe. Space goat. Hang on. Space goat farts. God, sorry, I had to do it.
That's great. I love that.
Because, it's got that very, like 50s movie kind of thing. Except they wouldn't have said that sort of thing. Anyway.
Well, sort of a takeoff of. What was that show?
Red Dwarf?
Yeah, no, it wasn't Red Dwarf. It was the one where they end up going back in time.
Babylon 5?
And they end up crashed back on Earth.
Oh, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. In the old, not the movie, but in the old series, right?
Yeah.
Because they had the A, B, and C arc. And all of the B people got into the B arc and left because of the giant mutant space goats. And so I postulated, now what would propel a giant mutant space goat through space? Aha! Newton's second law. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
She's such a geek. Pure geek. Anyway, yes. Brilliant. So.
Really, what we ran into was a situation of where the data morphs over time, and I had to do something, so I created a bin, if you will, a collection or a superset for areas where it was all the stuff that was unknown or officially denied.
Your X-Files, so to speak.
You got it. Exactly. I never conceived of it that way, but it's a very apt description, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, that was always my favorite section. I usually skip over the businessy stuff, and maybe a bit of the celeb stuff, but it was the space goat farts that always drew my attention. And Alien Wars was one of the memes. Noises from Space. And, oh man, it's all coming back. You haven't thought about this stuff
well,
for years.
Go ahead. The expansion of the planet, that's where I first ran.
Oh, planetary expansion. You see, you and I share this, and not many people do. You know, I'm a expandologist, what do they call them? An evangelist for expansionism. Because that's the way everything in the universe grows, and I think planets turn into stars eventually.
They may indeed. Look at what just happened the other day with the Chilean earthquake as well. Whatever its cause, the Earth expanded as a result, and it was shown in the topography of that region. We think of it as sinking, but it can't just sink without the expansion process also occurring. And this also is a part of the component of all the sinkholes, not only the ones of the, you know, where pipes break under the water and simply erode things, but also the mysterious ones that are bottomless. And it's basically because we don't live on giant plates. We live on interconnected boulders, if you will, and there's voids between them. And as the plates shuffle around in the expansion process, these voids will be revealed.
I see it like a fly agaric mushroom, the way that the cowl cracks and breaks as it expands.
As it expands, yeah. I never thought about that, but yeah, you're quite right.
And the other way is also the eggshell. If you imagine that you had an egg pudding that sort of expanded inside an eggshell, you would see the way that yes. the pudding would be cut into by the edges of the shell as it parted,
as it
got bigger, and as the curvature of the shell is now digging in, and that's what's happening in Japan, isn't it?
To a certain extent, and also there's this issue of the pressure involved, you know, because one of the main. Well, two main criticisms of the expansion idea, which it's patently obvious if you go look at Neil Adams' videos, but one of the criticisms has been that the pressure, what level of pressure must it take to cause all this to occur? And that we can demonstrate can be as low as 5 pounds per square inch above ambient pressure. You can get rocks to fracture with in huge lengths because we know this is the pressure levels that are hitting at the bottom in the fracking industry. So it doesn't take much to get the rocks to separate. Now, of course, aren't we just really accommodating to the planet? Here the planet's got to do kind of a molting process and expand because it's getting all these high-energy particles from the space that are getting trapped by the plasma ball at the center of the planet, and it's got to create new matter, and it's got to push that matter up our way. And here we are with our fracking, quite accommodatingly, shattering all the continents we can find by injecting water into them. Humans, you know.
So we're all going to look like polar bears on little bits of ice as we float around this mud ocean.
It just shifts back and forth. I don't think it'll... I don't know. I mean, there's no real way to look at it and say, okay, we're at this kind of a cycle. But there's a 100,000-year cycle, and there's a 500,000-year cycle, and there's one that appears to be about 253,000 years. And they they have different characteristics of the expansion process at each point. So, for instance, in one there might be separation. So, if we were to look back long enough ago, we would see Britain separate from the continent, from France, and it doesn't happen a little creep. It happens basically, probably all in more or less a single day. Within a single week that was active, within a single year that was active, within a decade that was really active. And so you get 90% of the action of a particular year and a particular week, etc. And so Britain probably like lurched away. But at that point it may indeed have even sunk and been underwater for who knows how long. And then the secondary phase of the expansion was the actual rising back up or the reemergence above the waves. A predictable component is this separation, the reemergence, and then the shaking about it in a lateral fashion for a while is the third phase. And so it appears, just on what's happened so far, but of course our lifespan is so narrow that this is really... folly to judge the whole process by what we've observed in these past few years, but it appears we're in one of those lateral shaking phases as opposed to the big rupturing and breaking away phase. However, I have to note within our data that there's always been, even back in the 2003 when the Space Gopharts entity first showed up, we've had these rising land memes, which indeed are happening all over. And that usually is part of that secondary phase where things rise up that had once been sunk by the separation. So we might indeed be in a sort of a phase two expansion as opposed to a phase three. Makes sense?
Totally. And the thing, you know, I look at America, you know, you look at Google Earth, and imagine you've got this, you know, it's an eggshell. You're looking at something like an egg that is expanding. And in the middle of America is this crack.
And yeah, tell us about it.
As the planet expands, that crack, the edges of the two sides of that crack are going to rise up, aren't they? And kind of put pressure on that inner bit, and something might give. And that's what the maps have been predicting, haven't it?
Yeah, they have been predicting. We've had a lot of stuff about a really nasty earthquake in our data set showing up for August, actually July of about 2017, all the way through to early in 2019. It's in one of those masking issues. I can't say how long or which earthquake is going to happen first, but it's going to be extremely active. But the issue about the pressure rising up on that, that may be one of those slip strike things, you know, where the pressure is actually as though you had two pieces of cork floating next to each other, and so they're going to slip strike because the pressure differentials are uneven under each separately, as opposed to them coming and being squeezed together or that kind of a thing. They may actually be squeezed apart in this case, a very nasty situation. If that is the case, and it really would make sense that in a general sense, that our understanding of the expansion, probably all three types of the process happen all at once. It's just that in some time periods, one is more dominant. So there's no reason we shouldn't have rising lands, sinking areas, and cracks forming all at the same time. But maybe rising lands will dominate this particular expansion, but we just won't know until it's all over. And none of us will be alive at that point, probably.
Such cheer, I love. So, we have...
meaning it'll be, you know, 100, 200 years over.
Oh, I see what you mean, rather before that, when it's over. But yeah, right, when it's stopped moving.
Yeah, it's got to stabilize, yeah.
All right.
Oh. No, it's not going to get us.
Hang on, Cliff, you're supposed to be living forever with this juice of yours.
No. The longevity doesn't increase your lifespan. That's a finite thing.
It's just more like Duracell.
Correct. You have energy right up to the last day, right? I mean, I've been through the process here with my mother going into dementia care. Now, dementia is actually a disease. The brain shrinks. Once the process is underway, it can't be stopped. It inevitably leads to death. I have seen people die in repetitiously and seen it go both ways, and I choose to go maximally right up to the last minute and then keel over. I just don't like the other alternative. I've seen it a couple of times and it's just not nice. So the goal is not necessarily to live longer, but to maximize the lifespan or live optimally while you've got it.
All of your life.
Correct. Well, what I think of from Aikido is big key forward. It's kind of a stupid saying, but it... it's very apropos at very many points in your life, because ki is the life energy, right? And in Aikido, for instance, you never want to do anything in a backward sense. You'll notice if you look at Aikido videos that we have sidestepping moves and we can move in a backward fashion, but we do not move backward the way that they do in many other arts. And so we keep our ki directed in a particular way as we're going along. And the saying is just encapsulated in big key forward, but it works for life as well. You run into an obstacle, you've had a rough day at work, you know, you've got a big interview ahead of you, you're crashing on the coffee, you didn't time it right, your stomach's all upset. You know, you take a deep breath and you can say, okay, for this next, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, big key forward. And it works.
I see. Uh-huh. I'm learning some of my opponent's secrets here. Because I'm not an Aikido. What do you call it?
Aikido ka.
Aikido ka.
Yeah, ka is student. So
and I is love, isn't it?
Aikido is actually comes from Aiki, which is the Aiki force, and it's best defined as mind body harmony.
Oh, mind body harmony. That'll do. Because I met a Japanese girl and I said, "What's your name?" She said, "I." I said, what? She said, I? Okay. Oh, I? All right.
But there's tonal intonations, yeah, that would make that an entirely different symbol.
Different word,
it
yeah.
It wouldn't be necessarily the same thing that I say as Aikido.
I see. All right. I get you. So it's not that generic. Okay. So we got some questions in from the people. And the first question that's coming is about the Gnostic kids. The Gnosticians or the Gnostikids. Yeah. Gnostikids. Any news on them?
Okay, some of those memes, let me be real clear about this. Some of the data sets we're not being self-censoring on, but they have a level of complexity that is bringing in data that I and those around me as advisors feel actually becomes personal. And so I've left out some of that. Okay, there has been advancement in that data set. It's probably going to show up in two or three ALTA reports from now as we let a particular phase of its growth go through, and then we can report on it. But it would be kind of like if we discovered, let's choose a really horrible, embarrassing situation, and this is not the case with the data sets we're looking at. It's much more of a personal kind of a family sort of thing. But let's imagine we had a data set that kept coming out about a politician involved with a pig and in a sexual way, and it grows over time, and then we report all of this, and then later on, the name of that politician comes out. Well, maximum embarrassment for the politician. Now, I don't care about the politician, but you could apply that analogy to the situation we're dealing with, where we have something that we think might be sensitive information that may yet become connected to a name, and I'd rather just not put it out. So here's the situation we run into. In the past, I've been asked to do private runs by individuals. Under certain circumstances, I've done so. I give them this caveat, though, that our data sets of a natural tendency in the code will always condense towards the negative, and so we'll always concentrate negative information. And you must be famous enough that your name or description will appear in various different contexts within various different languages for it to be effective. So you could pay me a lot of money and I may not find anything just because you're not high enough in the internet world to bring out enough association within the lexicon. And it really has to do with how crude our system is at this point. But that's one of the reasons that I don't do the personal things. Now, another thing is that we do. If you run into somebody who is emotionally has a high enough emotional quotient within people's consciousness that their name is referenced in the internet, occasionally pick up things about individuals that I would simply rather not reveal. I don't know if it's true. I don't know what the circumstances are. It's gossip and scandal and that kind of thing that is meaningless in the grander scheme of things. And so if we get sensitive information like that that is shades over into what we've categorized as personal, we just kind of let it go and see where it develops. If it's a politician, that's a different issue because they place themselves out there willingly and they're a psychopath. So, they get what they deserve. Yeah, but somebody who's just off the street, like I haven't burned anybody. And in fact, I think I've come close to aiding some people, but it's a fine line. If I located somebody and we applied an appellation like the Woman of Scars or something like this, and then let it become known as to who that personality was, there would be a really nasty repercussions for everyone, ourselves included.
Well, indeed, you came up with one in the early days. I won't bring back the actual name, but there was a person who was going around calling herself that and made quite a big splash on her own. And that probably really messed up your data.
It does. it ripples throughout it. It's like, let's look at something that's a situation that I've got here. So we get a hint that a personality is going to appear. We describe it in a report. Just because it's cool, we get information. We don't know who it is. We don't have a name. We just have a descriptor set that, might be, say, anything from 20 to 150, 200 words. And we put that on in a report, and lo and behold, the person appears, 3 or 5, 6, 7 months later. And then we find ourselves in a position here. I found myself in a position of having to acknowledge that, yes, indeed, the person who appeared within the internet, who rose to meet the criteria was this individual that had self-identified him that way. Now, so basically I was validating that this personality was the personality that was forecast. But a lot of people took that to mean that I was validating what that personality was saying was accurate and true. And that was not the case, and I've suffered the repercussions of that for a number of years. So Again, I've got to be real careful because I think the guy is absolutely a loon in terms of the data that he's presenting. He's caused problems with that. He's still out and about doing things this way. And as far as I know, none of the stuff he's presenting is in any way factual, and some of it is not possible, in my understanding of the universe. And so it actually goes against all the stuff I've in terms of how I understand universe and how it operates. But nonetheless, he was the personality that was going to show up. And okay, so he was a warped personality, but nonetheless, you know, we had a good hit, so to speak, right? Makes sense?
It's a bit like a kind of self-generating time travel story of some kind, isn't it? The way this kind of built up on itself. Okay, brilliant. So next is a question from Jeff. We've just had a brush with Jeff. No. That was the one. That was from Jeff. Next question is from Moxie. I'm going from, like, I've got three different chat rooms. One, two, three, four different chat rooms and Skype. People are sending questions. And this is, and again, another one that is really close to my heart, which is the new electrics. And did you foresee Keshe?
Indeed, at this point, I'll have to go back and double check just from memory. It's been a number of months that I've been involved with my mother's passing. So a number of things like reconciliation scripts that we run to reconcile our data sets against actual emerging language have not been run. But it does appear that way, yeah.
Excellent. Because, something that I've been messing about with, you know, I'm also messing about with, like, batteries and low voltage and having DC in the house and stuff like that. Yeah, kind of like
I'm doing that kind of stuff just to get the boat going, but I just don't have the time to pursue the inventive urge, you know. Oh. I've got it, but it's like it's got to be stifled at the moment because I've got to get stuff just working.
Cliff, you would love an Arduino.
I've got I've got a drawer of it here. I've got Arduino stuff all to hell and gone. But I've actually had to delegate that because our next move has got to be into the video stuff. So I've got myself a little drone so we can do some aerial video while we're out in the water. And we've got to get ourselves situated, and we're actually in a very tenuous time and place here that I've got to react to. So, you know, the degradation and breakdown is going to take a number of years. You can think of it as being in a depression globally for pretty much the next 10 years in general, but the really nasty stuff will start fading around 2019 and into 2020, and that's when our renaissance starts taking off again. But to get there, I'm going to have to survive a number of very perilous periods here, including natural disasters that may involve Mount Rainier going off. This will occur in mid-summer through to fall of 2017, if our projections are correct. We can't say as to the severity, even if the volcano is going to go off, but we sure have signs for a serious earthquake that's going to disrupt us here locally for a number of years thereafter. And the last time that happened, we had major bridges in town fall as a result of the 2001 earthquake that was, I think, 18 miles out of Olympia. Yet a bridge in a major crossing point across a body of water in Olympia just went kabloop, and it took them 3 years to replace it. Well, we may not be in a situation thereafter economically to replace things as rapidly as we had in the past. So there's that. There's the collapse of the bonds, the credit freeze, the just-in-time delivery system. All of this stuff is starting to come to a head. And we're going to see just a hellacious time getting through to the end of this year. And so it's kind of like, well, you know, I'd love to really get into some of this. I've got some great water experiments that I want to try, too, in terms of energizing water and trying new forms of structured water. But we've got to get to something more stable and simply grow food for a while and chill and work our way through it all.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been experimenting with structured water. You know, I'm messing about with structured water, but you have as well, haven't you? You've got a fantastic. Are you selling them on your website? Are you selling designs or anything?
That's a friend of mine. That's Jerry Durand at Durand Interstellar. He makes these really cool cups that are just phenomenal. that provide structured water in a really interesting and unique way, and he 3D prints them. He's into the 3D printing, and he's a really talented guy.
I want to
interview this guy. He does props for Hollywood, for Cirque du Soleil, for Las Vegas, for he does things that are not props. I mean, real gear that people want him to make and this kind of stuff, right? I don't think he does Black Ops kind of thing anymore, but I wouldn't put it past him. Really a talented individual.
Amazing
those,
to do that.
Structured water cups are phenomenal. What I find interesting is, and I've done the test, if you take that volume of water and pour it through another cup that simply has the same size hole at the bottom as the structured water cup, the non-structured water test case here takes longer to pour the same volume of water. And I've tried it with a number of different cup shapes. So it goes right through Jerry's cup there, whoosh, and comes out faster than it should. It actually is surprising. And, of course, the result is a different constituent of the lattice work that we call water.
Yeah, because it's water is a very interesting thing, and particularly, you know, when you do all this spinning and rotation on water, or you can even do it with your hands and make use the magnetism out of your hands. It makes the water, like you say, it slips down. It makes it really smooth and like it wants to be one thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It makes it slipperier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, and we know it reduces, you know, meniscus effect and all this kind of thing when you put it into various different kinds of beakers and so on. But there's components to it that are just quite remarkable. Yeah, so Jerry is really cool that way.
Excellent. Cliffhire, halfpasthuman.com. Thank you for sitting in with me for the last 2 hours. You've been a stalwart soldier in the fight against truth. You've had a million listeners. Vaubert is saying...
What's important is you've got to come and do my dishes now.
Okay, all right. That's fine. That's my first job. And Rebecca Jernigan says hi, and Vaubert says hi, and everybody's going crazy. Thank you so much, Cliff. God bless you.
Sure. No worries, Guy. Glad to do it.